I don't know.
The creatures were close now, so close that he could hear their snuffling, hungry growls and grunts. Yet despite the darkness that had settled on the world like a sable coverlet, he could see the priest's face clearly.
It is time, Alesh,
the man said again in a sad voice.
It is time.
With that, he reached out a hand that Alesh could have sworn was glowing, and touched him on the forehead. At the man's touch, a force with the power of 1,000 lightning strikes, with the strength of 100 whirlwinds, smashed into Alesh. He cried out, and blood flew from his ravaged body as his back arched under the invisible force rushing through him, his hoarse, incoherent shouts drowning out even the sounds of the nightlings. Power, raw and hot as if the sun itself had been placed inside him, roared through his body, and he felt as if he was burning alive. Then, as quickly as it had come, the feeling vanished, but in its wake, it left an answer. Suddenly, without knowing how or why, Alesh knew the answer to the old priest's question. How had a damaged Evertorch driven the nightlings back? It hadn't. Who had saved him on the road that day? He had. He stared around himself at the fires dotting the hillside, and he saw that fire, that light, in a way that he never had before. It seemed to him that he could speak to it, that if he did, it would hear. Abruptly, not knowing why he did it, but feeling that it was right just the same, Alesh breathed out, and in that breath there was a question, and in the question, a command. It drifted out from him, carried on the wind and through the flickering orange light on the hill, to each fire burning there, for where light was, the question was asked. It asked its question of the fire, and the fire heard. And then the fire answered. Streamers of light and flame, thin at first but growing every second, began to extend out from the blazes toward Alesh, so that it looked as if thousands of bright fingers were reaching toward him. Then the questing fingers of light found him, and when they touched him, power, strength, unlike anything he'd ever felt before, flooded into him.
Enough!
He roared, and his voice reverberated across the hillside like the crack of thunder. Men gathered at the fires, waiting for the bloody spectacle, stopped their conversations and turned to him, their expressions ones of shock, of awe. Growling in fury, Alesh flexed the muscles of his body, and the iron bonds enclosing his wrists and ankles shattered and fell away. He dropped several feet to the ground and landed on one knee, his body trembling with want, with need. He raised his head and stared out into the darkness and the creatures it contained, with eyes blazing like twin suns. Then he rose, his chest heaving, and strode toward the tree line.
"Remember me?"
he roared to the darkness.
"Do you know me? You do, and you will know me better yet."
Chapter 54
Impossible, Rion thought wildly. He watched in shock, his ears still ringing from the stranger's bellow, as the man screamed a challenge into the darkness like a madman. Streamers of light from all of the fires on the hillside trailed toward him, the blazes dimming as they gave over their light. Rion blinked, sure that he had to be imagining things, but when he opened them again, the streamers were still there, and the man was actually glowing. The stranger stalked toward the shadow of the tree line, apparently oblivious of the injuries he'd taken, injuries that should have killed him on their own, or, at the very least, left him a mewling, cringing thing of pain and torment. The stranger paused and glanced back, and a superstitious shiver ran up Rion's spine as those blazing eyes locked on him. Then, to Rion's dismay, he began to come closer. Rion tensed as he approached, and he seemed to feel the fury radiating off of the stranger in waves of heat. Suddenly he felt that he'd rather risk the Nightwalkers than this thing, with its glowing skin and eyes that blazed in their sockets like funeral pyres. The man knelt down, and Rion cringed as he reached forward, but the stranger grabbed the bonds holding him in both hands and tugged. The chains gave a tortured creak, then snapped apart, and the stranger tossed them carelessly to the side.
"Free the others," he grated.
in a deep voice filled with barely contained rage. Something growled hungrily nearby, and Rian and the stranger turned to see a nightwalker emerging from the trees. The man turned back to Rian, and his eyes flashed like a lightning strike.
"Now!"
he shouted. And before Rian could find words through his shock, the stranger was up and charging toward the nearest creature, bellowing a bestial cry of rage, and unless Rian had gone mad himself, something that sounded very much like eagerness. He watched in disbelief as the stranger tackled the creature and both went flying into the darkness.
"What have you gotten yourself into, fool?"
he thought wildly, as he turned and began fumbling at the bonds of the others with trembling fingers.
"Just what in the name of the gods have you gotten yourself into?"
Chapter 55 Catherine stared, shocked, as Alesh hurled himself at the shadows and the creatures that waited there.
"He'll be killed,"
she had time to think, a knot of fear constricting her throat. And then he was among them. She winced, expecting to see him fall at any moment, cut down by claws like daggers, expecting the Nightwalkers to pile on him and tear into his flesh. But they did not. She could see little of the creatures but the various colours of their malevolent stares in the darkness, and, from time to time, the vague form of their bodies as they hurled themselves at the man. A creature the size of a large wolf pounced at him, but Alesh snatched it out of the air, seemingly with no more effort than a man might give to catching a ball. He shouted in rage, and the muscles of his arms rippled and flexed as he held the creature by one arm and its throat. The Nightwalker screamed, an inhuman wail of agony and fear, and the sickening smell of burning flesh and hair drifted to Catherine on the wind. Alesh's arm tensed, and the creature's cry abruptly cut off. He tossed the lifeless body behind him, and it tumbled into the torchlight, a mass of claws and razor-sharp teeth and dead, burned flesh. Its eyes melted as if it had been cooked from the inside out. Catherine glanced back at the man, transfixed, and saw that any time his glowing skin touched the nightlings, their bodies sizzled and popped like grease in a fire, and they screeched in agony and rage.
"What are you?"
she thought, as she watched him tearing at the creatures, bellowing his own fury in answer to their cries as he waded among them, his arms, twin beams of sunlight, shattering their bodies beneath his heavy, lightning-fast blows. It was as if he didn't fear them at all. No, that wasn't quite right. It was as if he was filled up with a bursting, insane rage, so complete that it left no room for fear. Even as she looked on, a creature reared at him, raising its massive front claws to rake at him, and the man caught it by its arms, holding it at bay. The nightling snapped at him with a mouth filled with long, salivating teeth, its red eyes gleaming hungrily, but the man swatted its head aside almost contemptuously, wrapped both hands around its neck, and broke it with an audible pop.
"What in the name of the gods are you?"
Catherine thought again.
"A crazy bastard, that's what,"
a familiar voice answered.
"Now stay still."
Catherine started and craned her neck to see Rian working at the clasps on her ankles with a thin dagger. She hadn't realized she'd spoken out loud.
"Free the others,"
he grumbled, as he twisted the dagger this way and that, his hands shaking.
"As if anyone can just snap iron as if it were nothing."
Catherine waited anxiously for him to finish, forcing herself to keep still, despite her nervousness. The Nightwalkers might be busy fighting Alesh, but the soldiers around the hill wouldn't be content to just watch forever. Sooner or later, they'd get over their shock and fear, and decide to finish Catherine and the others the old-fashioned way. She was just about to tell the man to hurry when there was a loud click, and the manacles on her wrists came free, falling to the ground.
"There it is,"
Rian said, a satisfied tone in his voice.
"I think I've got the knack of it now."
Indeed, seconds later, Catherine's ankles were also free, and she rose, rubbing at her tender wrists. The man, Rian, went to work on the others, and soon they were standing together, their bonds lying useless on the ground. Catherine hurried to the crying Sonia and pulled her into a hug.
"Are you okay, baby?"
she whispered.
"He's glowing, Catherine,"
the girl sniffed.
"Alesh is glowing." "I know, sweetheart,"
Catherine said.
"I know."
"He won't be able to hold out like that for long,"
Rian observed in a tense voice. I don't care who he is. Whatever he did, it looks to me like it's wearing off. Catherine glanced back and saw that Rian was right. Alesh's skin still glowed, but it no longer carried the shocking brightness that had been painful to look upon. Instead, it had taken on a dull, somber glow like fire embers that were almost out. She thought she knew all too well what would happen when it vanished completely.
"We have to help him," she said,
struggling and failing to keep the fear from her voice. She looked at Rian, and the man glanced between her and Dahl, sighing.
"Why not? If the Nightlings don't get us, the soldiers will." "All right, then," he said,
producing two thin blades from the inside of his tunic. "Let's help him." Chapter 56 One of the Nightlings darted forward, opening its wide jaws and displaying a row of needle-sharp teeth. But before its mouth could close, Alesh caught one side of the creature's jaw in each hand, grunting with the effort of keeping the creature's jaws stretched apart. The creature made a guttural sound of pain, struggling helplessly as its jaws drew wider, then wider still, until they snapped with an audible crunching and tearing of sinew and muscle. The Nightwalker's frantic struggles intensified, but Alesh gave a mighty wrench of his hands, screaming, lost in his own unquenchable rage, and black blood and ichor showered over him as the creature's jaw ripped apart. He cried out as razor-sharp claws raked bloody furrows down his back and threw what was left of the Nightling into several others that were charging at him, and spun to face his newest attacker. The creature that had struck him was vaguely man-shaped, but its body was much too thin for any human and covered in what appeared to be interlocking black scales. Its jaw was twice as long as a man's, and full of sharp, needle-like teeth, its arms so long that the claws of its hands would have scraped the ground when it walked. The Nightling lashed out, and Alesh barely managed to catch its wrist before its talons tore out his throat. He growled, squeezing with all of the newfound power that filled his muscles, and the creature screeched in pain. There was a violent ripping, and the creature's thin wrist tore free from its body in a shower of blood as black as oil. Alesh threw the severed limb away with disgust and kicked the creature in the stomach, sending it flying back into the surrounding horde. He risked a glance back in the opening this provided, and was relieved to see that the man was just now finishing freeing the other prisoners, but the distraction nearly cost him his life. Instinct, more than anything else, caused him to dive to the side, and he narrowly avoided being skewered by a Nightling's darting tail. The appendage was as thick as a man's arm, and ended in a wicked, spiked projection, at least 6 inches long. Before the creature could retract the sinuous limb, Alesh grabbed hold of it and, with a grunt of exertion, spun in a circle, heaving it into the crowd.
"Please, gods, let them escape," he thought.
Then the creatures charged toward him in force, and all thought vanished as his body responded with instincts ingrained in him from countless hours spent training with the Chosen. Had it not been for Ahriman's lessons, he would have been dead in moments, powers or not. Even still, he suffered several deep cuts to his back, sides, and arms that bled freely, but he fought on anyway as he sought to fill the emptiness inside him with the blood of the creatures who'd created it. Here were those who had slain the Chosen. Here were those who had murdered his mother and father. He waded into them, an avatar of death, searing their flesh with his touch, glorying in each scream of agony, each wail of death. But even as he fought, he realized that he couldn't keep this up for much longer. The strength that had filled him before was slowly beginning to ebb, and each sidestep, each dodge, became a little slower, a little more sluggish than the last. Something struck him hard in the side, staggering him. But he turned the motion into a lunge, lashing out with his fist and striking one of the Nightsborn that screamed as it tumbled backward, its face bursting into flame. Another creature the size of a large dog pounced on him from behind, digging its claws into his already wounded back, and he fell to one knee under its weight. He felt the inhuman strength leaking out of him through his many wounds, and he growled with the effort and pain of ripping the beast free and heaving it away. He started to rise to his feet, but suddenly his legs were impossibly heavy, and his head felt as if someone was going to work on it with a smith's hammer. Nausea swept over him in waves as he struggled to one knee. The creatures closed in around him, sensing his weakness, uttering grunts of hunger and hate as they drew closer. Alesh watched them come, his teeth bared.
"Come and get it, you bastards," he snarled.
The creatures drew close, then closer still, and they were almost within touching distance when fire rained down from the sky. The Nightwalkers hissed and cried out in pain as the light struck them like a blade, and they collided with each other, snarling and biting in their haste to get out of its deadly orange glow. Confused, Alesh just had time to register that the ruddy light was coming from several large pieces of burning kindling before someone was on either side of him, helping him to his feet. "You're a heavy bastard, I'll say that much," someone said, and Alesh looked over to see the prisoner he'd freed. The man's face was pale, ghostly in the dim glow, but his eyes were hard, determined. Alesh grunted in response, suddenly too tired to speak. He felt more exhausted than he'd ever felt in his entire life, far worse even than after a long training session with Olliman. On his other side he saw the woman, Catherine, her face straining with the effort of holding him up, her wide eyes watching the creatures surrounding them. "Thanks," he croaked, noting the half a dozen burning brands that lay scattered in a circle around him. "But you should have ran. Those pieces of wood won't burn long, and then—" "Just don't you worry about that," the woman said. "We shouldn't have to wait long." Around them, the creatures growled and hissed in anger, several of them tentatively reaching limbs into the light only to jerk them back again. "Wait?" he asked. "For what?" he cut off, as the Ferenan man appeared, holding several makeshift torches that blazed fitfully in one hand, and guided a terrified little girl with the other.
"Alesh," Sonia asked, is it really you?"
Seeing her alive, Alesh fell to his knees.
"It's me, Sonia," he said.
"I'm so sorry, I didn't—"
he cut off, grunting as the girl rushed into his arms, nearly knocking him down.
"It's me,"
he whispered, not caring about the tears that wound their way down his cheeks.
She was alive.
Sonia was alive. Alesh laughed with the pure joy of it, and soon Sonia was giggling too.
"I don't know who you are, strangers," he panted, grinning widely at the girl, "but thank you for protecting my sister. I owe you a debt I could never repay. My name's Alesh, by the way."
"Catherine," the woman said. "We've met." Alesh stared at her for a second, then laughed again.
"I remember. You nearly got me killed."
"Yeah," she coughed, glancing at the Ferenan man.
Sorry about that."
If the Ferenan man noticed her look, he gave no sign. Instead, he surprised Alesh by dropping to his knees. The dusky-skinned man bent and touched his forehead to the ground before looking up to Alesh's eyes.
"I see you, son of the morning. I am Dal Ashik bin Akrala, chief of the Paliatkin tribe of the southern deserts, first witness of the dawn, whisperers, seeker of the true light. Long have my people awaited your coming."
Alesh glanced uncertainly at the pale-skinned man at his side, but the man only frowned and shook his head, apparently as confused as Alesh. For her part, the woman's mouth fell open in surprise, and her eyes went wide.
"Dal," she breathed, "you spoke."
The dusky-skinned man smiled widely, revealing a set of bright white teeth.
"Yes, my friend. I have found the Son of the Morning, the bringer of the light and destroyer of the darkness. The oath is ended."
"I knew you could talk,"
Sonia exclaimed, grinning. The man nodded.
"You are wise beyond your years, little one," he said solemnly. But the effect was ruined somewhat by his wide grin and the wink he gave her.
"Yes, yes,"
the other man said impatiently. "The Ferenan can talk. This one can glow like a firefly. The woman's suicidal, and I'm a fool. Now then, how about we save the friendly conversation for a time when we don't have Nightwalkers and soldiers drawing lots for who gets to kill us first?" Alesh frowned, his relief at seeing Sonia and confusion at the Ferenan's words evaporating as hate, fresh and hungry and insistent, flooded through him. He could make out Phelan Parr standing at one of the distant fires, with what looked to be four or five redeemers. The man had tried to kill Sonia, had, with Kale's help, murdered Abigail and Corin and chosen Olliman. He would pay. They all would. "You're right," he said, gently setting Sonya down. He turned to the Ferinan man, still crouched in the dirt. "Get up, man. I don't know what you're talking about, but there'll be time for it later."
"As you wish," the man said, nodding and rising to his feet with a cat-like grace.
"What now?" Catherine asked, staring with wide eyes between Dahl and Alesh.
"Now," Alesh said, his voice as sharp as the edge of a sword, "I will speak with General Parr."
He set off without a word, and the others fell in beside him as he stalked toward the fire at which the leader of the Redeemers stood.
"Phelan Parr!"
Alesh yelled, his voice echoing in the night, rising above the hisses and growls of the creatures around them. The General of the Redeemers turned from where he'd been whispering to one of his men to take in the group with wide, terrified eyes.
"Don't you come another step nearer, you monster!"
he shouted. But Alesh ignored him, stalking forward with deadly purpose, his anger and hate at all that had been taken from him crying out for release. Rian watched the stranger head for the firelight as if there weren't half a dozen armed men standing in it. The man could barely stand. What in the name of the gods was he thinking? He glanced at the others, but they were already moving forward, and, muttering a curse, he reluctantly followed after them. In moments, he and the others were within the firelight where the thin man and his small group of redeemers stood, staring at the man, Alesh, as if he was a nightwalker himself. Rian didn't blame him for that.
"Kill him,"
the thin man hissed. And Rian tensed in anticipation, producing two of the thin blades from his sleeves. But he needn't have bothered. The soldiers didn't so much as move an inch. Instead, they continued to stare at Alesh with wide, terrified eyes.
"I said kill him, you cowardly bastards!"
the thin man shouted. Two of the men backed away instead, and in their haste to get away from Alesh, they strayed too far out of the light. Claws shot out and grabbed them lightning quick, and the men disappeared into the seething throng of darkness. Their tortured, terrified screams lasted only for a moment. Rian swallowed hard, staring off into the shadows where the men had gone, but Alesh didn't spare them a second glance.
"You killed the Chosen," he said, staring at the leader of the Redeemers. No,
Phelan Parr blurted, his face going pale as he shot looks at the men, woman, and child gathered in front of him.
"I only did what they told me, that's all, just what they told me, I swear!"
He'd drawn his sword, but his hand trembled so much that it looked as if he'd drop it at any moment.
"Who?"
Alesh asked, his voice deadly quiet.
"Kael Leandrin,"
the man blurted.
And Chosen Teshana. I did just what she told me, that's all. Please, have mercy."
Rian felt his blood go cold.
Teshana was behind the death of Olimon.
Surely the man had to be lying. Rian glanced at Catherine and Dahl and saw his own surprise mirrored in their faces. For his part, the man, Alesh, only nodded as if he'd been expecting as much.
"I believe you,"
he said, in a voice so cold and seething with hate that it sent shivers up Rian's spine. "But as for your mercy, you will not have it. Come forward, Phelan Parr, and accept the fate that has been waiting for you all your miserable life." The thin man stumbled back, his head shaking in terrified denial, and snatched a burning beam of wood from the fire. Then, screaming, he turned and ran into the sea of nightwalkers, sending the creatures scattering before the light with howls of pain and frustration. The two remaining soldiers looked after their commander, then at Alesh, and finally at each other, before grabbing up makeshift torches of their own and charging off after their master. Rian looked at them in surprise.
"Are they insane? Surely they won't get away, will they?"
"It's all right," Catherine said, her own tone cold. "We can always get them later." "No," Alesh said, staring after them. "Phelan Parr has left the light. He has chosen the darkness instead, and so he will have it." Alesh took a long, deep breath, and his eyes flashed a bright, brilliant gold. Then he closed his hand tight, and the light of the distant torches vanished as if they'd been doused with water. In another moment, the night was split with the wretched death screams of Phelan Parr and his two men, and Rian stared at the man in awe.
What was that?
Alesh glanced at him, a cruel smile on his face, and Rian felt a shiver run up his spine. There was a hunger in the man's face, in his eyes, that was as bad as any that could be found on the face of the Nightwalkers.
Justice, the man growled. That was justice.
In the orange glow of the fire, the man's face looked almost feral. The teeth his smile revealed were those of a creature before it ravaged its prey. Rian swallowed hard. Oh, yes. He was crazy, all right. There was no question about that. He glanced over at Catherine and saw her studying the man with a troubled expression.
So it's done, then?
She said, in a voice little more than a whisper.
No.
Alesh grated, in a harsh voice that barely sounded human at all.
It's just begun.
What do you plan to do?
Catherine asked. Alesh thought of Abigail lying butchered in the street, of Corin propped up against an alleyway, dead for trying to save a woman and a child. He thought of Chosen Ahriman, the closest thing he'd had to a father, lying in his bed, his chest ripped open, the sheets soaked through with his blood.
I plan to find every last person responsible for what happened in Ilrica, he said. I plan to find them, and I plan to kill them. I'm going to kill them all.
Something inside of him, in the darkest part of him, rejoiced at that, and a smile that didn't feel like his own spread over his face. Catherine stared at the man and pulled Sonya closer to her. There was something dark in the man's face that she didn't like.
You can't be sick.
He held up a hand, and she winced out of reflex, half expecting him to strike her. He saw her recoil and frowned, turning back to the darkness.
Wait.
Catherine and the others turned to follow his gaze, and she gasped as the nightlings fled as if in terror, creating a large opening from which a figure approached out of the shadows. As the figure stepped into the light, it resolved itself into an old man in faded grey robes. The man's face held no expression, but his eyes seemed to be smiling.
You,
Alesh hissed. He took a threatening step forward, and Catherine was alarmed to see his hands knot into fists at his sides. Catherine watched, tense, but the old man either didn't notice, or chose not to respond to Alesh's threatening posture. Instead, he continued forward until he was only a few feet away.
"It is I," he said, nodding. "I have returned."
Alesh spat. "You've a habit of turning up when it's too late to do any good, priest. Or should I say, Armidan?" Catherine felt a wave of fear wash over her and glanced at the man to see if he was joking. But he didn't look like a man telling a joke. He looked angry. No, that wasn't right. He looked furious, like a man ready to do murder.
But it can't be, she thought. It's just an old man, that's all, not the god of fire, the bringer of the flame and creator of mankind. Just an old man.
Sure,
another part of her thought. Just an old man who spends his time walking through fields of nightwalkers with no more fear than a child skipping through her family's gardens. She realized that her hands were trembling. No, not just her hands, her whole body. She shot a glance at Rian and saw that the man was staring back at her with wide, terrified eyes. He'd gone so pale that he didn't look like a man at all, but some disembodied spirit floating in the darkness. Dahl was on his hands and knees, his head bowed so low that his forehead touched the ground. After a panicked moment, she dropped down beside him, and Rian followed a second later.
"How long have you known?"
the priest asked in an amused tone.
"Never mind that," Alesh growled. "You nearly got me killed."
He gestured to those behind him angrily.
"You nearly got my friends killed. Why didn't you help? What good is a god who won't help his people?"
Catherine's breath caught in her throat. The man must be completely mad. Who else would dare to talk to the father of the gods in such a way? She waited in tense anticipation, expecting them all to be struck down by the god's wrath at any moment. But when he spoke, his voice was calm and comforting, like the soft gurgle of creek water over stones.
I did send help.
Armidan, the bringer of the light and creator of mankind, said.
I sent you.
Alesh flinched at that, as if struck, and suddenly he didn't look angry any more. Instead, he looked tired, tired and lost, like a man who has been set on a task that he finds himself unable to finish.
Why me?
He asked, and Catherine was shocked by the utter anguish, the torment that filled his voice and twisted his normally handsome face.
I'm nobody, just the son of a dead commoner, a servant who was taken in by a great man and treated better than he deserved.
Armidan smiled, and Catherine was suddenly overcome with a peaceful, contented feeling that reminded her of sitting in front of a warm fire in the dead of winter. He walked up to Alesh and put a hand gently on his shoulder, gazing at him with impossibly blue eyes that seemed to Catherine as if they could look into a person's soul. They were the blue of the sky on a summer day, the blue of an ocean when the morning sun danced across it.
No, she thought, that's not right.
The man's eyes didn't look like those things. Those things looked like his eyes, imperfect copies of the depths, the majesty that lay in that gaze.
You are what you are, he said in a soft, comforting voice. And that is more than you know. You are the sun of the morning, and it is up to you to stand against the darkness that is coming, a darkness worse than any that has come before it. And you?
Alesh asked in a whisper.
What will you do?
Thunder crashed a short distance away, and the old man stared up at the sky, a grim expression on his face. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them again, they were full of such deep, abiding sadness that Catherine felt an unexpected tear fall from her eye. It was a sadness that spoke of innumerable hurts. It was, she thought, a sadness that no human could bear, one that would crush any normal man or woman under its weight.
I will do what I can to help you, the god said. But I have my own battles to fight. The light help me.
Alesh opened his mouth to speak, but stopped, as two shapes appeared out of thin air behind Armidan. The first was a young man with one eye as black as pitch, the other so white that it hurt to look at. And Catherine felt herself stunned anew as she recognized Javan, the god of chance, dressed in white armor that glowed brightly, and a cape as dark as the night around them. Beside him, graceful even with the fear that was plain on her face, possessed of a beauty to make the world's greatest poet lose his words, to make the realm's strongest man weep, stood Deitra, goddess of music and art. Her dress was the same that she'd been wearing in Catherine's dream, and Catherine noticed that there was an almost hair-thin scar running down one of her cheeks.
The string of her harp, she thought with a shock. The scar is from where the string of her harp struck her.
Javan, the god of chance, was said to have a twisted sense of humor, and he was most often immortalized in busts and sculptures with a wry smile on his face. But his smile was nowhere to be seen now, as he stepped toward Armidan. Father, he said in a deep, grave voice, completely at odds with his appearance, we have to go. She is coming, and you cannot meet her, not in your weakened state.
In a moment, Javan, Armidan said, turning back to Alesh. You must protect them, Alesh. Please, for me, save them. Save my people.
Alesh's mouth moved for a moment, but finally his face grew hard. I will do what I can, but not for you. I will do it for them. I will not be your slave. Javan frowned, stepping forward.
You will not speak peace, Javan,
Armidan said, holding up a hand, his gaze never leaving Alesh's. Immediately, the lesser god fell silent.
I would not have you be,
Armidan said,
nor anyone.
Alesh barked a harsh laugh.
Strike me down if you want, but do not lie to me. I know better.
Chosen Ahriman spent countless hours on his knees praying to you, seeking your favor.
A genuine expression of surprise came over the god's face for a moment. Then he raised his head to the sky and laughed, a deep, hearty laugh that echoed across the hilltop.
Praying, you call it? Well, I suppose you might call it that, though yelling would be far more accurate, and I can assure you it was not something I enjoyed. Brent had quite the temper.
Father, Dietra said. The goddess's voice was melodic, possessed of a harmony all its own, but Catherine could detect the worry in it.
We really must...
A moment, daughter, the god said. He turned away from Alesh, and Catherine froze as those blue eyes locked on her.
Ah, Catherine Allah, he said.
Rise and be at peace. Terrified, Catherine rose to her feet on wobbly legs.
My daughter has told me about you, Amidan said, smiling. I see that she has chosen wisely.
Chosen? Catherine thought, confused. But she bowed her head in response.
Thank you, my lord.
Amidan nodded, then turned to Rion.
Eriandrian, he said, humor in his voice. We are well met. Please, rise and be seen.
Rion did so, his face as pale as a man attending his own execution.
My son, Javen, has told me about you as well, the father of the gods said.
Yes, sir, Amidan, my lord,
Rion stumbled. Amidan laughed then.
Be at peace, Eriandrian Tyrrhenian, and carry my blessing. You are a man who likes to gamble, are you not?
Catherine would have thought it impossible, but the man's face paled further.
Ah, yes, my lord, that it is well, Amidan said.
For we will be taking the greatest gamble there has ever been, and we stand to win or lose. More than we ever have before.
The god glanced at Dal, and Rion breathed an audible sigh of relief as the god's attention turned away from him.
And you, the god said, Chief Dal Ashik bin Akrala, long have I known your fathers. May the sun be always at your front, and the waters always at your feet.
I am unworthy, my lord, Dal said,
planting his forehead in the ground.
No, my friend, the god said, leaning down and gently pulling the dusky-skinned man to his feet. You have given much for the light, and your people have not forgotten the old ways as so many others have. There is none worthier.
Yes, my lord, Dal said, bowing his head. And may your own drink be sweet and plentiful in the land.
Amidan nodded, then turned to Sonya. If anything, the little girl looked far less terrified than the rest. He smiled at her, and she smiled back, a bit shyly, but no more than that.
"Ah, daughter,"
Amidan said, kneeling down so that he could look her in the face.
"It is well with you?"
The little girl smiled, hugging Alesh's leg.
"Yes, sir. Thank you."
The god smiled, then rose, turning to Alesh.
A man could not ask for greater allies, I think, and that is well. You will need each other in the days to come.
A sudden gust of wind sent leaves flying around them, and lightning crashed nearby, lighting up the world in a flash of brilliance.
Father,
Javen yelled, having to shout to be heard over the rising gale.
We must leave now. She will bring the others with her.
Amidan nodded grimly and turned back to Alesh.
There is much that I would tell you, but it seems that we are out of time. My wife is coming. Javen is right. She has grown powerful in her hate, and as I am now, I could not protect you from her. We must go, but know that I will send you what help I may.
He turned to the lesser gods and nodded, holding out his hands toward them.
Come, Javen, Dietra, attend me.
Oh, and Alesh, he said, turning back. You are a lot like him, you know.
Ahriman?
Alesh asked incredulously.
Chosen Ahriman was the wisest, kindest man I know. He was a hero.
So he was, Amidan said, smiling. He put a hand on Alesh's shoulder, and it shone with a blinding brilliance for a second, then was gone. And he, too, was a poor fisherman. Alesh opened his mouth to respond, but the gods vanished into thin air without a trace. The five of them stood, staring at where they'd been, each considering what they'd seen and heard. Finally, Rion cleared his throat.
What now?
Alesh turned to them, and in the torchlight Catherine saw that one of his shoulders held a deep puncture scar with black lines radiating from it. The other, the one Amidan had touched him on, was marked by a golden handprint that looked remarkably like the sun. Staring at it, the words in chosen Alesha's letter ran through her head.
And he will be marked with the light and the darkness both.
Now, Alesh said, eyeing them each in turn, now we prepare. The night cannot last forever. He looked at the dark sky, his jaw set. The morning comes. This is the end of The Son of the Morning. If you enjoyed this audiobook, find more just like it by visiting audfans.com, the premier audiobook discovery service that brings tailored recommendations direct to your email. That's audfans.com. You have been listening to The Son of the Morning, Book 1 of The Nightfall Wars. Produced by Emily Durr. Executive producer, Greg Lawrence. Written by Jacob Peppers. Performed by Derek Perkins, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Text copyright 2017 by Jacob Peppers. Production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.